Blog Talk Radio.
Smart Sound.
I love that music. Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Good evening,
good evening,
Mr. Edwards.
Mm-hmm. And good evening,
yeah.
Don.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's a beautiful day. Looks like some of the snow melted. I didn't get my car towed, parked on the wrong side of the street, or anything like that. So it's been a great couple days.
Right, whatever. Okay, let's get to our guest.
Yes, as I put up in the promotion, we have State Representative Brenna Moran, St. Paul DFL, the Deputy Minority Leader, and also with us tonight will be Kayla Houston, and she'll correct me if I messed up her first name. She's the founder of the Village Arms and Child Protection Chair of the Minneapolis NAACP. First of all, I'd like to welcome both of you to the Ron and Don Show. You're live on the air. State Rep. Moran.
Yes, I want to say hello to Ron and Don. Say hello to you both.
Okay.
And it is a good day when your car don't get towed for being on the wrong side of the street in Minneapolis.
Yes. Or St. Paul, for that matter. And then also with us, I'm going to introduce her again, Ms. Kayla Houston. She's the founder of Village Arms and Child Protection Chair of the Minneapolis NAACP. Ms. Houston, are you there with us?
I am, and it's Kalise, actually.
Okay. Kalise, okay. Well, thank you
Kalise,
for helping me.
Yes.
An English teacher pronounce that correctly. I appreciate that. Well, Mr. Edwards, I think I'm going to start right in with State Representative Moran, because I go through these emails that I have all the time, and I'm on a few listservs that I don't necessarily contribute to, but I read a lot of stuff. And an email came across that says, "Black children disproportionately removed from their families, state lawmakers seek to fix." And there
mm-hmm.
was a very well-authored letter by State Representative Brenna Moran, St. Paul, about the situation and what was going on and how these African-American children or black children were being disproportionately not handled. And it reminds me of a conversation a few years back, but I guess I want to start with you, Representative Moran, and tell us a little bit about what you're doing. What are you seeking to fix as a lawmaker under the lining of child protection?
Yeah. Well, first, let me just say I just want to thank you for having myself and Kalise on the show to talk about an issue that is really disproportionately impacting black families. And
okay.
my hope is that we can, I have brought forth a deal with the help and support of Kalise, has been working really, really hard around this issue to bring some resolution, some solutions through a very, you know, multifaceted approach. But in the state of Minnesota, African-American children, they are being removed from their homes really at an alarming rate, and a large number is crossing over to the child protection, is crossing over from child protection into our juvenile justice system. And we know that
okay.
happens often.
Representative Moran,
yes.
I'm reading some of that here, and that's interesting, but why are the children being taken out of the home, I guess, is my first question, because, you know, we have an hour and a half, and if we have to take that long, we can, and I want to get
an hour
detailed.
And a half. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we got other things to talk about because there's a lot going on, but I just want to deconstruct this in a way where our listeners benefit, because when you say that black children are being taken out of homes at an alarming rate, are there some causal effects that is happening? I mean, what are the reasons?
Yeah. So one of the things that we know is that, you know, I don't know if your readers know, but in 2014, Governor Dayton created a child protection task force because of the death of a young boy named Eric. And from that
yes.
task force that was created, there came out 93 recommendations. From those recommendations, we have seen a large portion of reports going towards the investigation, goes towards an investigation instead of assessment. But what we're also
okay.
seeing is a higher number of our black children going through that track compared to the
okay.
number of white parents who are being funneled into this investigation track.
Okay,
so
you're talking about five years, basically. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but you're talking about 2014 and 2018. So within these last 5 years, at some of the facts here, 60% of the cases involving African-American children are assigned to the family investigation path for discretionary, in quotations, reasons, compared to 39% for Caucasian children. And
mm-hmm.
and these facts are damning in itself. In 5 years, the task force was created. They came up with 93 suggestions. And are any of those being acted on? Because it seems like the black children are slipping down a trap, basically.
Can I add something to that?
Yes, please.
Ms. Rena?
Please.
Yes, please.
So even prior to the governor's task force, our children were already disproportionately represented and disproportionately removed and placed in out-of-home placement, even in face of the same allegations as Caucasian parents. But then after the governor's task force, there was like a 50 to 60% increase in out-of-home removals and primarily African-American children and Native American children were the result, unfortunately. The 27%, I believe, and that's just a rough guesstimate, are being removed for alleged neglect, and then about 24% for parental drug use. That's the data
okay.
around what DHS has released concerning the state's removals. And I can get into a little more details as we continue about how those children are actually being removed.
So I guess my next question is going to be, is there a program or something working? I mean, how do we address this from this point forward? Because, we create a lot of task force in Minnesota, and I'm just trying to get to the nucleus of what's happening here and how we solve it.
Right. So one of the reasons why I asked and suggested that Khalees be a part of this conversation is that she has a wealth of knowledge and insight, has been dealing directly with a lot of parents who have been who have had encounters with, the child welfare system, out-of-home placement, child protection. And so I'm going to let Khalees do what she does well
okay.
and just share some information she knows. Is
okay.
that okay,
well,
Khalees?
Before I let you go,
mm-hmm.
that's going to be great. But
and I'm not
before we turn it over to Ms. Houston, I would like to Mr. Edwards to get in, and if he has a question or
no,
a
no,
comment,
let's
that'd be
let's
great.
Do this. I want to honor the suggestion by the state representative because she's
yes.
at the
okay.
very front lines, and so Ms. Houston, go right ahead.
Can you repeat the question for me,
Don?
Okay, I was asking, is there a solution? How is the solution? How do we get to the nucleus of this? This has been going on, like you said, even before 2014, obviously. And I remember
right.
incidents in 1974, 79, and 81
yep.
involving a
yep.
large number of black families just in South Minneapolis. So,
yep. And now they're targeting North Minneapolis.
Okay. And, I lived in that area, so that's how I knew about it. But I mean, how do we solve this? Do we need another task force?
That's not the way that I would go with it. I wouldn't call it
okay.
a task force. So the work that I'm doing with with my organization, Village Arms, as well as with the NAACP, is trying to address it. And I'm taking a multidimensional systemic approach. So legislation, policy reform within DHS, and the counties, and then as well as individual advocacy for families that are impacted by this system. So HF 3973 would be a great first step and addressing some of it. Every bullet point included in that bill is something needed to address disparities. So there's nothing added that is not that wouldn't directly impact the numbers and lower what we're seeing as far as our out-of-home removals and termination of parental rights that our parents are suffering through. The policy reform within DHS, what we found, and it's really a frustrating trend that we found across cases where children are being removed from very fit parents, actually parents that even within the county's own documents are not, they don't pose a threat or risk of harm to their children. There's this neglect statute, and I call it a catch-all because a lot of our cases are assigned to neglect, and that can mean anything from inadequate food, clothing, or shelter. But when you hear the word neglect, you automatically, or most people think a baby being left overnight or a child being left for 3 days and not being fed, and that's not the case. Neglect could mean anything, and you see when you look at the data concerning African Americans that most of our families are having their children removed with that allegation, which is very vague and subjective.
Oh, wow, yeah. Let me ask you a question. When you say DHS, Department of Human Services, and it kind of brings to mind the Minnesota Department of Education, MnDOT, Department of Administration, Department of IT Department, these mostly the demographics, white female staff, agencies in the state of Minnesota. So how do you break down that barrier to communicate with these people that have basically the say-so inside of DHS, the child well-being department? How do you fix that, for lack of a better question?
Continue conversations. And it hasn't been easy. I've started advocating around this issue, I think, shortly before Eric Dean's death, so probably the past 4 years. And everyone within DHS and at these counties, they're well aware of the issue of disparities. Like you said, the issue has been an issue for the past 30-some years and more, actually. But the continued conversations, pressure from the community, raising public awareness has had to be the focus, because I attempted to just have some meetings at the onset to see, you know, what they would be willing to do to address it, and it hasn't been much.
Okay, and so it is an uphill battle, but
it is.
And I'll ask both Ms. Houston and State Representative Moran. I mean, how do we as Black Minnesotans address this disparity? When I say this disparity, I'm talking about the disparity of the demographic, racial makeup of the people inside these type of agencies. And we coming in as Black men and as Black women to tell them and say, hey, whatever you've been doing for the last 30 or 40 years is not working. We need to do something different. And whatever this barrier is or this boundary that you have cannot go any longer. I mean, how do we get into that? How do we fix that? And that's across the board here. I mean, you know it. I'm not telling you nothing or anything you don't already know.
Part of the bill. Go ahead, Ms. Rena.
No. Go ahead.
I was just going to say part of the bill would address that. So language in the bill would create an African-American Child Welfare Advisory Council appointed by the commissioner full of African-Americans, as well as an African-American Child Well-Being Department within the Department of Human Services. And the Department of Human Services would then report to that advisory council regarding the number of our children in out-of-home placement, where they're being placed, disparities, what they're doing to handle those, and how they're actually working to preserve families at the onset per case involving African-American children. So really getting the communities to support this bill would be a big chunk of that battle for us. We need the oversight and accountability.
Okay. And now, I mean, I'm going to go down. I want you to think about organizational design. I've just pulled the bill up on the Minnesota State Legislature House, HF 3973 and SF 3773 kind of work to this. And I'm kind of looking at it now. Is there, you must have a process already in place if this thing flies and does what it needs to do. I mean, someone has taken steps to sit down and author or design a model that might have to be a pilot, but something that they think we have a lot of confidence in that will work to kind of change the tide of this system and what's going on with our black children taken out of the homes.
I've been meeting with DHS, so I don't want to kind of throw them under the bus and say that they haven't been willing to address this issue, because we have been having ongoing meetings with Commissioner Koppel, Marvin Davis, Jamie Sorensen, Ms. Maxie Rocky Moore, an African-American that was on a task force for about 10 years back in. They did a lot of work to get some resolutions in place and provide us with case studies. And so they have been willing to have the conversation, and they're willing to have me at the table to design certain things. But I'm looking for, I have a sense of urgency around addressing the issue, because I'm on the ground with the parents. I see the impact of what these workers and this system is doing to the families. And because we have the data, we know what the outcomes are. I guess I would just like to see more of a fire under DHS as well as the counties in addressing it, the same fire that they had in addressing the issue for Eric Dean.
And Mr. Edwards, that's the second time that, second time that Eric Dean's name has been mentioned. For our international and domestic listeners, could you just indicate who Eric Dean was and what the history was in regards to him becoming, I hate to use the term, but kind of the poster child for corrective action? Either one of you.
You want to take it, Ms. Rena?
No, I'm going to let you go ahead. I'm going to have to do some backfilling about why it's important to move legislation.
Okay. So Eric Dean, God bless his soul, was a 4-year-old Caucasian child who, in Polk County, was reported 15 times as a child in need of protection against a stepmother who was abusing him severely. So he was showing up at his daycare and to other service providers with broken bones and bruised body parts and his face, and we have pictures. She eventually killed him because child protection never moved to remove that child. My argument is always, and I hate to use him as an example, but I am almost forced to, the exact opposite happens in cases involving African Americans. No allegations of abuse. One phone call to child protection at times, and our children are removed and kept out of the home. Eric Dean was never removed.
All right, I appreciate that. That's important for our listening audience, who the child known as Eric Dean, a 4-year-old Caucasian. In fact, there were two big articles in our two major newspapers here in the state of Minnesota, the Minneapolis Star-Tribune, the St. Paul Pioneer Press, about what happened to him, and a series with regards to the failure of the agencies and entities to deal appropriately with the ultimate consequences of what happened to that child, and that was that he they killed him. So I wanted to get that. Let me do this at this particular point, and then we certainly, because the representative has indicated she wants to talk about the legislation, and that's one of the areas that I want to touch on at this particular point. But let me just say this to you, Ms. Houston, and to the representative. This kind of sounds like, unfortunately, regrettably, and tragically, a repeat of activity over 50 years ago. You were talking about 30. I can take you back over 50 years. The NAACP and other African American and Native American groups in 1968-69 began to bring this issue up. They marched on the state capitol. They came in. They sat in conference meetings. Heard conversations early on, 1968, 1969. I was a member of the NAACP, and just for absolute clarity as it pertains to this, I'm a 79-year-old African-American, still blessed to be very, very active. When I hear both of you ladies talk in terms of the pitfalls, the dangers, the threat to the survival of the African-American child, I go back in my own memory over 50 years. This is not anything new that these folks don't know about. Representative, let me just say this to you as one who was involved in these battles, as I said before, back in the 1960s, working through both the NAACPs of Minneapolis, St. Paul, the state conference, if you will, the urban leagues at that time of both cities, that many of the arguments that I've been watching very closely that have been made by you, Representative, if you will, by you, Ms. Houston, and your advocacy organization, were the same arguments that were being put forward by African-American women, primarily, such as Carol Ann White, Lorraine Smollard, only Ms. Smollard and Carol Ann White, who has relocated out of Minnesota, are basically still with us, if you will. Native Americans, some of them are still with us. Clyde Belcourt, the Native American Child Action Plan, et cetera. So for a 79-year-old African-American who is still blessed enough to have all his full faculties, I don't have a lot of sympathy for the position of some of our legislators and politicians, because they should have began to research this a long time ago, because that was one of the promises that they made to the African-American and Native American communities, that this was unacceptable. It cut the moral fiber of this state and et cetera, and it would never be allowed to happen again. Of course, I knew they were lying, BSing, and whatever else. But I just want to reinforce you, both of you ladies, and particularly the state legislator, that this is nothing new. And if these folks would have done the research that they say that they had done, they would have known that the African-American, Native American community specifically came to the Minnesota legislature, testified in committee, if you will, went into the office of the governor, met with many of the county executives and et cetera, expressed the concern. All kinds of promises were made. This basically went on up until around 1973, 1974. Then they started drifting again, if you will. But primarily, a group of Native American women, African American women, fought this battle 50-some years ago. And it is a shame before God and country that this problem continues to exist, and that the primary target are children of color and primarily African Americans. Go ahead, Mr. Allen, or State Representative. Any questions that you may have about the legislation?
Ron, I just wanted to say thank you for taking us down that history lane. You know, we talk about, you know, this is something that has been done for over 50 years. Okay, I can take you back to slavery. The breakdown of the black family is a part of America.
Mm-hmm.
And this system does just that too, and it continues to do that. So I'm not under any pretense this is going to be easy, simple, or quick, or that everyone is going to be advocating or supporting it. We know that. That has never been the case, and I don't think that it's going to be a simple task at this moment, because
once again, let me just tell you, not to cut you off, Representative, but once again, the African American and other communities of color have had to step into the breach. I mean, you and I are clearly, and Ms. Houston are clearly aware of the historical traits, but I gave the historical perspective so that we do not have to listen to people who talk behind our backs. Talk in terms that the Negroes would have addressed this problem 35 or 40 years ago, we wouldn't be in this predicament. This community did address it 55 years ago.
Absolutely.
They did.
Okay, go ahead.
And we continue to address it. along the way for 50 years plus, we've still been trying to address it. And, you know, the one thing that I believe in is that, and why this bill is here, because I am a true believer that it's policies that create practices that keep us in this place.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to do something different, make it a part of the law, and continue mm-hmm. to fight for it. You know, one of the things that I do is that I work really continuously with legislators on both sides of the aisle. You know, what the work that we have to do as African Americans, as Black folks, is always continually educate others, because for some reason they don't know our history, or either they pretend as though they don't know our history. So we're always the educator for them and of them. So mm-hmm. we're re-educating them again, you know. And so it is going to really take a lot of relationship building. It's going to continue to lift up our voices. It's going to still need to be led from the Black community mm-hmm. to create a process. Currently right now in the legislature, we have more people of color and indigenous legislators than in the history of Minnesota politics. And I think we got to utilize that power that we have to seek out the injustices that
right.
is happening, not only with the Black kids, but the Native American kids are disproportionately impacted too. And what you have with House File 3973, yes, it is a model that we took from ICWA, the Indian Child Welfare Act.
That's right. And I'm aware.
Mm-hmm. We're not trying to compare ourselves to the sovereign people,
mm-hmm.
but we're creating a process that puts some of this power and decision-making process back into the African-American community mm-hmm. hands to make decisions.
But let me ask this question, not to cut you off, Representative,
mm-hmm.
but we need to get as much information out there to our listening audience, both locally and domestically and et cetera. My understanding is that Mr. Terrell, the Black State Agency, I put it like that, gave testimony before one of the committees in the last 8 or 9 days. Could you enlighten us on how that testimony was received and what has been the commitment, if anything, to follow up on that testimony that was given by Mr. Terrell?
So I believe you're talking about Justin Terrell from the
That's
Council
correct.
Of
That's correct.
Minnesota
mm-hmm.
Council of
mm-hmm.
So,
not Tyrone Terrell. No, Justin Terrell. You're absolutely
Justin
correct.
Terrell.
Go ahead. Yeah,
yes.
Justin Terrell. Mm-hmm.
So I didn't hear his testimony. I don't know if Khalees, were you there to his testimony? I know he is a strong advocate. I feel really good about the council under his leadership. This bill, House File 3973, is a priority of the council.
Mm-hmm.
And him along with the council has become strong advocates and supporters for this
okay.
bill, work that needs
okay.
to be done.
All right. Now, has he dialogued with you after his testimony? I think he was accompanied by the Somali gentleman who is like his research director or whomever, and they both addressed the legislative committee. Now, have they reached back to you to make sure that there's the appropriate guidance, because Mr. Terrell is new to this process, and that is being
mm-hmm.
a part of the legislative process, if you will. So are they reaching back to you, and what additional things do you feel, and Ms. Houston, need to be done, because this legislative session ends, what is the date in May?
We finally die May 21st.
Yeah, unless you put a cloth over the clock. But go ahead.
Constitutionally,
yeah, go ahead.
We have to end. So Justin Terrell has been working in partnership with me and also with Khalees. And Khalees, maybe you can talk a little bit about you guys have a relationship that goes back a little bit around child protection, I believe.
Yeah, actually, I met Justin probably 10 years ago working in a homeless shelter for youth, and it was the what I saw happening to African American children in these shelters was the catalyst behind my advocacy. But Justin has been great so far, trying to connect with community members that are really advocating for change and interested in policy. He's taken this issue and added it as a priority for their platform moving forward, including increasing teachers of color, restoring the vote, and other issues that are greatly important to our community. And he's been great so far in advocating and helping us push it however we can.
And one
I have
of the
a
things,
question.
And I think one of the other
for,
things, I think one of the other things that Justin and the council bring to this body is that he is building a base that comes from our community of tracking
mm-hmm.
the bills, you know, being the one who's bringing communities into this body with the, you know, the voices, but with the phone calls, the emails just showing up, just keeping this issue at the forefront of what we need to do to create better equitable outcomes for our children and our families that's coming through the system.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'd like to get another question because it's always important to educate our listening audience. We've talked about two specific bills. Could you identify for us who the authors of those bills are?
Yes, so I am the chief author of House File 3973 in the House, and Senator Jeff Hayden is the chief author of Senate File 3773. He is the deputy minority leader in the Senate. I am the deputy minority leader in the House.
In the House, that's right, yes.
Yes.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you, because that's important information. Go ahead, Mr. Allen, I think you asked a series of questions.
Yes, yes. I have a question for Ms. Houston and something that I'm just trying to figure out. Now, you're with the NAACP, you're actually the child protection chair. I guess my question would be, what is the ongoing means of the Minneapolis NAACP as far as to fund your activities, make sure, you know, you're out there lobbying, or not lobbying, but advocating and doing what you do, going to all these meetings? I know you have your own agency, but are they able to give you the supportive arm of marketing, public relations, advertising, the outreach that you need to hit the mainstream with this message? Because it seems, you know, to me, and I'll wrap it up and let you answer, it just seems to me like this is on email chains, this is in certain places, but getting it out more broadly, like you're doing here tonight on this
right.
show, but also in a smart ad campaign
right.
that hits the mainstream, talking about bus shelters, signs, Clear Channel, whatever you got to do. Can
right.
you facilitate
so we
that
just,
through the NAACP?
I am hoping to, and that was the reason that I started the committee. Actually, it's the only one, and I want to eventually have one started in every state in the country, as this is unfortunately a longstanding national issue. We just had a change in leadership, so Leslie Baidu is the new Minneapolis chair. We were scheduled to have our strategic planning meeting to discuss how the NAACP presidency and national could support the work of the chairs, because we're all doing different things. But because of the weather this weekend, we had to reschedule. But that is the goal.
Right.
I intend
to make this a federal push. Yeah, let me do this, because we want absolute, information and et cetera, and
mm-hmm.
accountability. Now,
okay.
the NAACP process, you have your local branch membership, and I assume that this matter is certainly something that has been brought to their attention, and I know they have to be in support. You have the
yes.
state conference. Has the state conference, which I think is about due for its quarterly meeting, probably either in Rochester, Minneapolis, St. Paul, St. Cloud, Duluth, has the state conference gone on record, and this is to both you and the state representative, has the state conference sent any kind of letter or document of support of what you're doing? And then I have a couple more of the procedural questions that go with, quote-unquote, the NAACP, because you talked about a national agenda. Has the state conference of the NAACP taken this matter up and endorsed it and indicated support for your efforts?
No, they have not. And I am all about all of us working together. I feel like we're all doing good work, but we do it in silos, so we don't have the impact that we could have. So I've reached out before to garner support and get St. Paul behind us, and then just to bring a louder voice to the table.
Is that President Diane Benz in St. Paul? Okay. Now let me
just continue. Yes, and even before her, WC I reached out to as well, and a few others.
Now WC is the state conference president and the president of the Rochester NAACP. At least he was. Is he still the president of the NAACP in Rochester?
I believe so.
Oh, okay. Now what about Baltimore? What about the national office, if you will, as well as the national director of branches?
I attended it and attempted to submit a resolution requesting a child protection committee be created again in each branch, and it didn't pass, but I intend to continue to.
I'm sorry, I have to ask this. It's a long time. It didn't pass?
I have the information, but there, because we were going through our change in presidency, even then, Nakima had left and Jason was taking over, so there was some red tape that kept my resolution from being heard as it should have.
Ms. Houston, I understand what you're saying. I don't want to browbeat you or be a bully, but Jason was in for about maybe a year. There's been a national convention and the state conference and et cetera. It's taken them that long to rally support for your proposition. Is that what we're to understand?
Well, it's a process. I don't want to point fingers at anyone.
Well, we'll do
it's
that.
A process.
Yeah, well, that's our job as communication.
You say you'll do that.
Well,
one thing that, you know, we're doing locally right here, you know, we just got this bill. We got the House file number. We had a press conference. We are gardening. We got to have boots on the ground. We got to connect with people who've been impacted, you know, building our relationship with DHS, you know, bring them on, you know, looking at the different, you know, the council. And, you know, what I've learned about as a legislator, but really as a community organizer, you start mm-hmm. home, then you move out, and then you move out, right? And so what we're doing now doesn't stop now. This is just the beginning, right? We put it out there. We're trying to – I was so happy to hear that, Don, that you were supporting this, asking to come on, getting this out into community because it has to reach the people who've been impacted to most to also be a part of the solution and to move this. Because the stories that you heard from, like, the press conference, there are so many of those stories over and over again. They go back 50 years plus. So this is just the beginning. So reaching out back to, you know, bringing in the Minneapolis and St. Paul to Rochester, even a national. You know, I'm connected to national black organizations. And, you know, we all have to find a way to not just in St. Paul, but take this back to our respective state and make this a state, you know, a national movement. But, you
for
know,
sure.
That's a process. It takes time. But and we know this. And we know this. And we also know that we have people who don't care, who give all the other reasons why, you know, you got bad parents and you know, who bring their own worldview into this space. About who we are as a people,
right?
Who we are.
Okay.
And so,
all right.
And I want to be very clear. Our actual numbers are very low. The data concerning abuse cases involving African American parents are actually very, very low. Very low. But the out of home rates are. Oh, go ahead.
Right. Right. I appreciate what you're saying, ladies. For me, it is a reminder of 1968, 69, 70.
Yeah.
In other words, 50 years ago. But I'll turn you back over to Mr. Allen, and
yes.
Maybe he'll begin to wrap it.
Can I say something to that, though, too?
Go right ahead.
I just want to add a tidbit. Yes, yes, I know efforts have been made over the past 50 years, but this is my first time addressing this, and I continue to push, and I believe God sent me to do this. So we will see some success, and we will see some movement,
right,
and we can
right.
use
God,
what
God,
was done 50 years
right.
ago.
God bless you, and may his hand remain on your shoulder. Mr. Allen, turn it back to you.
Yeah, and that's what I'm talking about. State Rep Moran and Ms. Houston, would you be willing to take a phone call? We have a caller that would like to either make a comment or ask a question, okay? Caller, you're live on the air with State Representative Brenda Moran and Ms. Kalis Houston. Did I get that right? Thank you. Go ahead, caller.
Kalis.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Kalis Houston.
Kalis.
Yeah, right.
Go
ahead. Go ahead.
I'm writing it down.
Okay. Thank you very much. This is a longtime caller, Mr. M. I really enjoyed the conversation about child protection. I worked with Hennepin County Child Protection for 20-plus years. I was probably the only African male supervisor there in child protection field while I was there. And, I left a few years ago because the agency was clearly not only losing its focus, but had lost the ability to network with not only the community, but law enforcement and all the players that are involved in helping families in Minneapolis and St. Paul. I'll just give you an example. One of the things that we did as I supervised in the agency, every school year we would have a big meeting, and this meeting would entail police, the schools, and child protection investigators. And we'd have a kickoff meeting, so we began to know the players in the community and how we're going to do our work to keep children safe and to hopefully keep families intact. And at the same time, cooperating with each other to keep kids in school, which is a huge, huge issue, especially in Minneapolis. We continue to lose schools, we continue to lose teachers, we continue to lose resources, and we continue to lose continuity for the community and the students and the families in that community. So they have a person and people and an institution that they know they can count on for their schooling. That may allow a parent to go to work. That may allow a parent to look for work while these kids are in school doing their part. And see, we've kind of gone so far away. It's just, I could just, make a long story short. I mean, I could go on and on about this. Like I say, I supervise new workers that were afraid, new workers that had never been on North Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Let alone being able to go into these families and engage with them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a huge disconnect between what the agency does and what the community perceives what the agency does. You look at the paper, they put these articles on when bad things happen, which, God forbid, that was my worst nightmare, something would happen to one of these kids. But they put these things in the paper without a real, child protection is supposed to be punishing parents, that this is a quasi-law enforcement agency. It's not.
Right.
It's a service agency that's supposed to help these families stay out of the law enforcement. I mean, poverty and jobs and education, those are such huge obstacles and barriers in this city, and we all know about the disparities that nobody seems to have the urgency to really kind of let's attack these things. If we have to attack them one at a time, let's do it that way. But I want to say, ma'am, I do commend you. I commend the fact that you are going uphill with this thing. And it's the type of thing that you can't back down.
Right.
You have to really, DHS, that's another thing people don't really understand. DHS is in charge of state child protection. Everything
right.
is all the counties. It's a federal organization that each state has the right to determine how they want to do it. Some states do it private. Like in Texas, they have private practitioners. They don't have county. We've decided to do it through the county. And I've always said the key is to work together, but also have realistic services. When clients get caught up in child protection, I mean, it's ridiculous to say, okay, we want you to do a Rule 25 and do treatment, but there's no service.
Exactly.
We want you to go to therapy, but there's a waiting list for you to go to therapy. we want you to do this, but you don't have transportation to get there.
Let us do this because we don't like
And I'm not
going to
go on anymore.
No. Could you explain to our worldwide and domestic listening audience what a Rule 25 is here in Minnesota?
Yes, a Rule 25 is where a person has been alleged or they've been seen or they've known to have some drug or chemical issues. This Rule 25 is a meeting that you go to make an assessment of what type of services you need to address that issue. And if that's an issue in court, that shows the court that if you have the Rule 25, if there's recommendations of treatment, inpatient or outpatient, and you follow that, well, if that's your main issue on your plan, you can go to court and say that you've done that. But if there's waiting lists, if workers won't even say, I'll take you to the treatment. You have to have workers that really want to engage with the clients. I mean, people are indifferent.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Different mindsets, they're indifferent. You can say, okay, I want you to go here, get in line. I want you to go get treatment. And they've never done this before. Or maybe they have.
Exactly.
But you have to really be able to nudge and push people into doing that. This is what the social service part of it is. And that's what they need to emphasize instead of the punishment.
But there's no real services because I don't call a Rule 25 UAs and parenting assessment actual services.
Not services, but it has come down to just a perfunctory type thing to move people through the system. I'll tell you just one of the. I don't want to take up all your time. Like I say, your passion, and I know the hard work that you're doing. But I went to a big meeting with the county is about one issue, and that was about visitation for parents whose kids are in out-of-home. And because of billing problems, it looked on paper like the clients weren't visiting their kids. So at the meeting, they said, well, if they're not going to visit the kids, let's just get rid of the visiting services. And I said, there's no way you can do that because once you get in the system, if you're not seeing your kids and continuing to work toward reunification, this is one of the biggest parts of this thing. But I just say that to say there was a disconnect between the people running down in the government center, people that are out in the field actually doing the work, and that needs to somehow come together.
Okay.
I agree.
So,
all right.
Something
he made some really good points.
Yes, he did. Absolutely. Absolutely. He's a man that was in the system. He knows what he's talking about.
So he made a very, very valid point of that we have become, the state has become a very punitive resource. The Department of Human Child Protection was created to remove kids with a plan for reunification.
Mm-hmm.
That is not the case. The Department of Human Services, as I get into my conversations with DHS staff, and it is a top-down system, is that we talk about what that ACE means. It's the human part where the humanity has left that department.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't see that humanity as they do the work that they do for children and family. The Child Protection Task Force created 93 recommendations on the premise that it was about the safety and well-being of children. Yet, with your 93 recommendations, there was lack of funding, lack of training dollars, and a system that did nothing more than separate families without the resources necessary to keep kids safe in a bigger way. Right? And so that is where we are at with DHS. That's where we are at the legislature, who say that kids are important. And not recognizing that when you get to the point where you are removing kids from home, who become traumatized.
Right.
They're, you know, bless foster parents, but they are strangers to those kids.
Right. Right.
And we don't loop back in to give those children the support that they need. Right. Often enough, because they're underfunded and there's a lot of unfunded mandates within the system, the parents are not getting their plan in a timely manner.
And even when they do get the plan, there's no concrete resources attached to it.
Right.
No concrete services.
So what I've been doing and what we've been doing is bringing some humanity back into the system.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is about real people's lives. This is about our children, our babies, our community. This is about the foundation of who we are and the Black family is. And we have to validate that and recognize that the research and the data and the statistics tell us about the disproportionality of kids in every part of the entry into the system throughout. We are seeing
mm-hmm.
the disparities.
Mm-hmm.
Our community, we're valuable people, you know, but we deserve to have a system that validates us, that gets us into places where we love, where kids are feeling love.
Right.
With the purpose of being reunified to give family supports that are needed to families, all in the sense of safety and well-being. But other families are given these services at a greater number than our Black families. And all we're asking in this bill is to create a process where we are creating some accountability, working
right.
towards reducing the disparities,
yes.
and keeping families healthy and strong. That is what we need to do here. And it needs to be in policies, it needs to be in practice. We have to talk about trauma-informed policies that create trauma-informed practices. We can no longer look at a process where we have 87 counties doing things 87 different ways. Some are going in,
right.
some are not getting in, some get service, some are not getting service. We need, you know, the JDAI model is a model that can be replicated. And I'm not saying that's a solution. I don't know that yet. But what we do know is that our Black families, our Black children, who is our future, are being treated disproportionately different. And that is not okay. And so trauma, adverse childhood experiences, you know, looking at, you know, practices, all of that has to be reformed. And training dollars, because, you know, we don't have enough social workers that looks like us going out into North Minneapolis. And unfortunately, whether it's intentional or not intentional, we have people that come in with their implicit bias, their racist bias, and maybe they're just unconscious biases that they have. But those mm-hmm. things
but,
are
but
real.
Let me just ask this question, legislator. We all understand that. Because, you know, it's not only just in Hennepin County, but it's in Ramsey County and Olmsted
yeah.
County and St. Louis County.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But I just have to say that unfortunately, this is not anything that's new to the institution that you're talking about. And I guess the question becomes, at what point did folks start dropping the ball again and again and again? But, you know, you've given us a analysis, if you will, and solutions and et cetera. And I just hope that these organizations and et cetera, and I think my colleague, Mr. Allen, agrees, and the gentleman, we just hope that they can put together a juggernaut, if you will, and get things done. But I have to say this to you again, you know, and sometimes the wisdom of elders are not properly respected. We've been here before. And, you know, yeah.
We
and
have.
So,
but
yes,
legislation
yes,
has not
been
on the
before.
Table.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But no one's brought legislation for an African American Family Preservation Act.
That's not quite accurate. No. There was legislation brought in the 1960s. Now, I'll leave two names with you, and I'm kind of, you know.
That was for the Minority Heritage. That was for the Minority Heritage Act.
Senator Robert Lewis and State Representative Ray Pleasant. Take a look at it. It's in God. All right. Mr. Allen, go ahead. Finish up.
Yeah, I would just like to say, you know, I appreciate
Ms. Houston and State Rep Moran coming on. Appreciate both of you being on with us tonight. And Mr. Edwards said something that kind of rung a bell in my head. I just have to speak on before I let you, you know, I don't mean to keep you, but, you know, it's like we did an hour show with you, and that's okay. But the African American Men's Project back in 2008, if I'm not mistaken, had a piece of what you're talking about in it to deal with, you know, in Hennepin County, to deal with these young men, I think it was 18 to 21 or 18 to 25. And, you know, the county spends $1 billion a year on people 12 to 21. And you count from 2008, that's a lot of money. But there was a piece that dealt with this foster care and this out-of-home placement and child protection in that piece for the African-American Men's Project, which has no services now, today. So I'm wondering, how do we get to a point where, and you might be able to answer this, you might not be able to answer this, because I'm looking at it from an organizational design, problem-solving point of view.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get into this system that Mr. M talked about, that Mr. Edwards talked about, and this repeat of these activities that are focused on one challenge or problem that we creep up and we hear, you know, every 5 to 12 years or something like that? That's just like in the fall in Minneapolis, you hear that there's 3,000 jobs for people in North Minneapolis, and in the spring, you hear there's going to be another $5,000 job for the same people. But if you could answer that question, you know, how do we get past this point where it's not a repeat? We can't repeat anymore. We can't afford it.
We can't repeat it, and I don't believe because it's such a longstanding issue or because people have tried to address it before that we don't continue to address it, not when I see every day the impact that it's having on the families. So what I intend to do is to continue to hit it as far as legislation is concerned and then eventually take it to a federal level as well. I'm building a support system of organizations even outside of the NAACP that includes those of European descent as well that want to get behind this and want to push for it. So I think just really continuing to build that base, referring back to the work that's being done so we can find out what worked and what didn't work, and we move from there so we don't completely recreate the wheel, but use what we know, what we see has worked, and build from there until we have something that works.
That's right. Because I look at my life through a political arena, that this is an election year. We have every state legislator up for re-election, state county attorney. I mean, we have the state attorney. We have the secretary of state. We have
attorney general.
We have congressional leaders up, and we have the governor's race. And that we need to show up. And the question that we are going to put on everybody's mind as a collective is, how would you support, one, this bill?
Yep.
How will you support better outcomes for black families? It's an educational moment for them, and it needs to be a priority for them. And that's a collective move that we can do statewide, bringing in the Fathers Project, bringing in the African American Babies Coalition, bringing in all the NAACs from across the state, bringing in our community allies, bringing in those parents who've been impacted, having these young people tell their stories who have aged out of the system to become homeless or addicted or incarcerated. We have to make this a priority for our community and keep those in power accountable to us to create some different and better outcomes for our family. And then when they don't, we're going to make some decisions about that. But we have to lead on it, and we have to seize this moment and have the greatest impact that we can at this moment to create a more fair and just system that doesn't always serve us justly. You know, so we just have to build it. We have to build the power, you guys.
We'll be looking to have you, both of you ladies, back with us at the end of the legislative session. Let's make that offer now, Mr. Allen.
Yes.
At
yes,
the end of
absolutely.
This current legislative session in early May, and give us an update. Ladies, we appreciate it.
Yes.
Appreciate you taking the time,
appreciate
and we certainly appreciate the tremendous effort.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I so appreciate you, too. Thank you for having us.
Thank you both very much for calling in. Thank you.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right,
well,
Mr. Allen.
That was a great interview. That was a great interview.
Oh, yes, it was.
Great interview.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And you know, I think it's great that we are prepared to have them back second week, third week in May, and give us an update, find out what's happening, find out what the organizations, many organizations that are fairly flush, if you will, with volunteers and staff and et cetera. I think that's just absolutely great. Mr. Allen, I want to move this particular agenda because I've been getting text messages as we've been on the air for the first hour. We have a crisis right now in our city with regards to a homicide of a young man who was very much an activist, if you will, Tyrone Williams. There's been nothing but chaos and et cetera. The mayor, chief of police here in Minneapolis are under pressure. There's been no apprehension, if you will, and some are saying now that there is some retaliation that is taking place against those who were involved in Black Lives Matter, the occupation of P4, the 4th Precinct, and et cetera, and I would really hope that is not what is at play here, but the individual and individuals, this thing took a turn on Saturday at the funeral of the deceased, Mr. Tyrone Williams, at Shiloh International Ministry, when the sister of the deceased hollered out the names of three individuals that she indicated were involved in the assassination of her brother. And now, oh my God, 3 days later, you know, calls are being made to the mayor, to the chief, and others indicating that there is some kind of conspiracy. Initially, we had heard in day one of this tragedy that Mr. Williams had been killed by a undercover squad of white police officers. You know, we talked about that here on this program. You know, we thought that had been dealt with, but in the absence of any, or at least one warrant that has been issued and signed by a judge, but I'm just not sure where we go from here with regards to the apparent dissatisfaction of the Williams family with regards to the effort or lack of effort being made by the MCD, the United States Marshal Service, and et cetera. So if anyone has any calls, any observations about this, because it was a very emotional scene, I am told, on Saturday at the church with regards to people knew who murdered this young man and yet apparently have not stepped up and et cetera. Are you hearing anything?
You know what, I was hearing a lot of chatter, which you talked about earlier, about that a squad of law enforcement or supremacists had come into the community and murdered this young man, and that kind of faded out shortly because that was going quite a bit on social media. But I have not heard the news that you just broke about what's going on and kind of the stalemate that it seems that the police department and others are in. And there must be a reason for that. If they do in fact know,
yes. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Mr. Allen. You're actually on point. Go ahead. I seem to have lost Mr. Allen. He was saying that there needs to be a serious examination and explanation and et cetera of what is happening. Mr. Allen, are you back? My God, we seem to have lost the airwaves. I'm not sure what has happened. We were supposed to be on for an hour and a half. I hope that there wasn't any kind of governmental interference. I'm asking again, Mr. Allen, are you back? Is there electrical or technical problems? Mr. Allen. I'm not getting any kind of message here. I'm not seeing any signal. It appears that we have possibly been cut off, if you will.
By this time, Mr. Allen should be back on. But you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to continue to speak until I hear a signal that there's been a re-engagement, and that is that there has been controversy to date in our city that the investigation is being mismanaged and that the fugitive or fugitives has been allowed to escape, if you will. Now, this is what is coming from sources who are identified and associated with the family, friends, and supporters of the deceased, Mr. Tyrone Williams, as we speak. And I'm really concerned that we seem to have been cut off the air. I'm not quite understanding what has happened. Well, I'm still receiving signals here. I'm not understanding what has happened. I'm going to call Mr. Allen on another secure line and see what's happened.
Mr. Edwards.
Yes, Mr. Allen. I mean, what has happened here? Is it NSA or something?
Oh, I don't know.
Were you totally cut off? Was I cut off? Or what happened?
No, we were both cut off, kicked off the web, off that website and everything. And so I had to dial back in the show, but luckily you didn't hang up. So it's perfect. Yeah.
Okay. And how were we cut off? Was there some hacking or... All right, so let's do this, because this story is important, because so much is happening. I was asking you a question. Now, by the way, the phone lines are open. I assume the phone lines are still working. But there has been controversy in the city, particularly today, that there is a lack of effort in bringing to justice either one or three individuals who were involved in the murder of Tyrone Williams. And again, the phone lines are open. I know we have some of our friends out there who who listen in. Maybe if they have any question or et cetera, or we could have any questions of any of them. Because demands have been made this afternoon of the chief and the mayor that they intensify the investigation and bring individuals to justice, if you will. Now, I'm beginning to think that this information was not to be known, though, if I'm not mistaken, didn't you post a couple hours ago that we would be talking about the death of Tyrone Williams?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. It's right there on our show page. Yes, sir.
Don't know what happened. Could you get the phone number? Phone number, phone is open.
Sure.
If you will,
the
controversy
phones are wide
now
open.
Raging across our city.
Yeah, it's at 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And the phone lines are wide open.
And let me say why this becomes
comments,
even more important.
Donations.
Is there someone trying to call in?
Oh, no. No one's trying
let
to call in
Let me indicate the latest move that's afoot with regards to the office of the chief of the Mass Police Department. The Minneapolis City Council very quietly has entertained discussions to create the position of city manager for public safety, which will require the chief of the Minneapolis Police Department, the fire chief, the head of civil defense, and possibly communications to report through the office of city coordinator for public safety, which pushes the current chief of the department down another notch as it pertains to direct contact with the chief executive officer of our city, and technically puts his office under the control of the city coordinator. And this is being quietly talked about, and I'm shocked and surprised that some of, quote-unquote, our activists and leaders have not made us aware of this. I mean, obviously, we're aware. I repeat again, the discussions have to do with Barrett Lane, if you will, a city official, and a proposal that has been made, and it's the talk of the police department,
that the chief of the department be pushed down of another level and report to the newly created position of the city manager for public safety.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. That's
actually nuts, to tell you the truth. Wow. That's like saying you don't have any confidence in your police department or your police chief, for that matter. You know?
Absolutely.
That's
absolutely.
Is this in play by Mayor Jacob Frey of Minneapolis?
I'm not sure what the mayor's role at this hour is, but they know that in the committee that oversees, and what they did, they had it in the committee. It'll be on television. It was on television today. It'll be on television tomorrow on the city's channel. But it came up in a meeting dealing under the guise of city business, civil rights department, and et cetera. And all of a sudden, there was this discussion. This was day before yesterday. They tell me the newly elected council member Cunningham is very much aware of this, was a part of the discussion. I'm not sure what the role of Councilman Ellison was, if you will, but Councilmember Jenkins was there. And I was kind of shocked. Now, I would think that if that's really something folks had wanted to do, they certainly should have done it before we elected or selected our first black chief. I want to repeat again. It's to create a position for a white woman, Caucasian woman, who is close to the city coordinator. And it would create the position of a city manager for public safety and require the chief of the police department, I guess the fire department, civil defense, and maybe one other, to report to this woman who will become the city manager for public safety. Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So that's... Well, you just brought up some. You said some names of city council members, and what I'm noticing too, Mr. Edwards, is like at a lot of important votes, some of the city council members aren't showing up. And
yeah,
I
wondered about that too.
It's becoming a trend. Yeah, yeah. So,
in fact,
wow.
They had that
so,
the first time around, Don, when they looked up and the name of Velma Cord Vail, the 8-year civil rights director, was table, and there were a couple of important council members that didn't show up, and then also there are council members who now are not voting, which means technically that's a no vote. I mean, you know, we're just talking about what's happening, but this thing has come to light because they're talking in terms of, and I repeat again, dropping down an entire level, the access that the chief of police would have to the office of the mayor. And the city manager would basically be the one that would come in and speak to the council on matters of public safety in the police department.
So the city manager would have broad oversight, which would probably include some of the fire department?
No, not some.
All.
And, you know,
okay.
We just
all
had controversy
department.
Because initially the mayor was indicating he was not going to reappoint the fire chief. Then some things happened because there was a possibility of age discrimination. Oh, yeah, let's tell it here tonight. And so he was to be reappointed. In fact, I had a discussion with him at a meeting at the Davis Center when controversy broke out. That was the week before they went to scuffling and fighting at the at Sabathany, if you will. Indicated he had been told that he would be reappointed, and this was a part of how the discussion took place. And the recommendation came out of nowhere to the creation, again, we repeat it for the fifth time, the position of city manager for public safety reporting to the city coordinator, and a Caucasian woman who, you know, I don't know where she came from, would be the person that the chief of the department would be reporting to.
That's interesting.
But now
that
this
is,
all comes on the heels of much tension today about the fact that a retaliation is in play against those who participated in the occupation of P4, 4th Precinct, and that because of the association of some of the people including members of Mr. Williams' family with Black Lives Matter, that there's a lack of interest, if you will. Now, there are two full-time units of homicide detectives, but with the statement that there's an additional two individuals, I mean, this is not something that Don and Ron are putting out there. This happened at the funeral.
No.
The folks who were there, there was a total of 853 people were in attendance for this young man's funeral. 853, Mr. Allen. And they heard the declaration. They heard the names of three individuals identified as being the individuals involved in the murder of Mr. Williams, if you will. Now, I know folks are watching the basketball game and et cetera, are playing like they're watching the basketball game. But this is what has happened. And I'm shocked that we're not, we have no one that's questioning what we're saying.
Yeah. You know, Mr. Harris, I would just like to let our callers know that the phone lines, or potential callers, the phone lines are over at 347-426-6309-04. And when you call and you want to listen and block your number, it shows up 111-1111, and we appreciate you calling in. So, but anyway, let's
absolutely
see.
Absolutely.
Caller, do you have a question or a comment? Okay, they're listening. Yeah, they put it on mute. Yeah, okay. You show up on a switchboard. I mean, but if you have a question, you know, we're easy guys to talk to. And
Absolutely.
Just call in and ask questions. So, wow. So downtown Minneapolis.
Any questions on your part, Mr. Allen, with regards to this this investigation and allegations that are now being made and demands that arrests take place? Though, if you can't find people, you can't arrest them. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
You know, it continues to represent, you know, black on black violence. Oh, by the way, be advised that there have been discussions. There have been discussions in the last number of days. There is a minister who is being used as the facilitator in town crier. Is that a enemies list has been acquired as it pertains to all this discussion about a new black coalition that needs to be formed to address the multitude of problems within the African-American community. So there is an enemies list. There are people's names that are being battered about as being persona non grata, if you will, to be allowed to sit even at the table and to discuss the issues. Okay? And so I initially had said I would hold that in abeyance, but I think not. I think it's important that folks know that this is happening. An enemies list has been created. And some of it, what's troubling is that some of it deals with matters of police and public safety.
Okay. I guess I have to ask you a couple questions. Enemy list. Are you talking about people in the community that engage black people that have been doing it for many years, and
yes,
there's a new group trying to step in?
The names that have been provided to the individuals who have repeated that, if you will, and have identified the sources, the conversations, the meetings that have been taking place, and et cetera. Yes. There will be a prohibition against those that are considered to be enemies of the state, who seem to be a rather disproportionate number of African-Americans who have been involved in fighting the battle for quite some time. But, you know, maybe as people have said, that they don't need to hear about history or the past, want to talk about, you know, the modern-day approach, whatever that means. But that conversation is going on. And some of that is becoming unraveled in the last 24 hours as demands are being made for immediate arrest. You know, initially folks thought it was initially they were saying it was white police acting as murder squads, and then, as you said, that fell apart. And then folks thought that there was one, and then at the funeral Saturday, three names of three individuals, and there is now discussion that those individuals' names have been put on a death list. So we've got enemies list, we've got death list, we've got some, well, you know, now we've got some real peculiarities in our city right now.
Yeah, and, you know, this sounds like something that happened, I think it was, I want to say 2008 or 2009 in North Minneapolis, you know, where a couple leaders got together and decided that this group had to go or that group had to go, and nothing ever really came out of the new group. Matter of fact, that's happened at our local black radio station, where one group overthrew another group. That's happened several times at that particular entity. But,
yes,
you know, this is kind of interesting because, you know, we sat back. I know you have sat back, Mr. Edwards, and watched this over 50 years, this process.
It's not long. Right, correct.
Yeah, and what happens is really not what needs to happen. It's just another social club, basically.
I'm trying to figure out how that will be defined, if you will, of who is, you know, on the enemy's list. But now we have an even more serious problem in some regards because names have been put out as persons involved in the homicide of a popular young man. The word is that there will be a number of hits that will take place. Now, Council Member Cunningham has indicated that the group known as GVI, formerly gang, now called Group Violence Intervention, that they will be called in to deal with problems like that, as well as, now this is peculiar, is because we're getting ready to see some new policy on housing, evictions, and et cetera. You know, folks have been saying that needs to be kept secret too, but that's not the policy of the Don and Ron program. Am I correct?
You are correct, sir.
There you go. And so that is in the works. And so in the course of those kinds of discussions, you know, it starts being discussed about, you know, who will be the authority figures that will be listened to and embraced by city officials and et cetera. I mean, and I'm like, oh, okay, all right then. Because, you know, we had a tough year last year. We had a tough year in 2016, yet we spent over $2 million being paid to individuals, organizations, and et cetera, to patrol the streets of our city, north and south. People, you know, spend too much time just talking about the north side. It's South Minneapolis. It's the suburbs and et cetera. And, but anyways, it needs to be put out. I know we're coming up on the last, what, 4 or 5 minutes of tonight's program. Again, Mr. Allen, his phone number. I'm just hoping that the mayor and the chief and the city will have some kind of press conference in the next 24 hours to reassure the general public that there is a serious effort being made to apprehend the killers of Tyrone Williams, a gentleman gunned down in front of his mother's home there on the 800 block of Elwood, if you will. If not, then I just don't know what the conditions will be for our beloved city in the coming months.
Yes, because dangerous times over north and south and St. Paul
and
all over.
And the suburbs, yes. So,
yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. I mean,
Go ahead. Go right here.
No, I was just
surprised
that
we have no inquiry whatsoever to why the Tyrone Williams case is not close to being solved or people have not been apprehended. Now, by the way, in closing, the family has indicated that they were informed at some point that some person had been taken into custody but was released. And my understanding is now that they're demanding answers on why the individual was released. I don't know if the individual is one of the three individuals named at the funeral on Saturday. There is so much confusion out there right now, Mr. Allen. I just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to agree because, I mean, you're seeing stuff on social media, you're seeing stuff downtown Minneapolis on the streets, and the kids riding a light rail. I mean, it's a volatile situation all the way around. And so I don't know how some of these problems are going to get solved, and I'm a little bit troubled by the lack of process by the city council, the current Minneapolis City Council, and the mayor. I see nothing but bravado. No, I don't see any problem solving.
Well, that's
all
a good
whatsoever.
That's a good word, Don. Bravado. Yes, yes, a lot of bravado. Yeah. Except a lot of people fled the meeting at Sabathany last week, when confrontations broke out as people were threatened, as a couple of black ministers, a couple of community activists who have been out there for a long time trying to deal with this, as I understand it. I was not there. I know Al Flowers was almost physically attacked there. In fact, there was some bumping, and then there was some scuffles and et cetera. This is not what we're saying. This is the headline in the Minneapolis Star Tribune. And we know that when, you know, a white newspaper says that it's the gospel, it's the gospel, right?
Bottom line, that's it. If it's white, it's right, you know. So,
man, there you go. Yeah.
So
that's what it is. Again, I thought we had a powerful presentation for an hour by two ladies talking in terms of what was happening. I hope that the Council on Black Heritage, I hope that they get everything that they need to have completed to the legislature. I'm expecting we will see a vote on those two bills that were read to us, authored by two long-standing African-American legislators, Senator Jeff Hayden and State Representative Moran, if you will. And so I'm looking forward to their return in the middle of May to update us and find out. And I'm really hopeful that the NAACP, even all the way up to the national, will get aboard and bring other organizations like the Urban League and others with them. Because I didn't hear the Urban League being mentioned.
No, not at all. Not at all. And I was going to bring that up, but I said, well, just let it go. But, Mr. Edwards, last year it was this funding, the second half of this $35 or $70 million
dollars in the last year.
Okay,
yes.
That was last year. And so that was the golden carrot last year. And I'm not disrespecting State Representative Moran or Ms. Houston at all. I'm just saying, this year it seems like that this bill is the one that everybody needs to rally behind to see if it passes. And if it doesn't pass, because I'm going to send State Representative Moran an email and ask her not only to talk about these two bills, but let's talk about the bills that are focused to the Black American or the Black Minnesotan community and what happened with the outcome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We,
and who's getting the money?
Yes. Yeah, who's getting the money? We encourage that. That's the purpose of Black Talk Radio, which we are internationally, domestically, and locally. And so what are we down to, Don? The last minute or so?
Last minute, right now. We got James in the background.
All right.
If you want.
A good program for James Brown to take us on home, and hopefully we will have information from the mayor and the city as early as tomorrow, with regards to if the suspect or suspects have been apprehended in the death of Tyrone Williams.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening.
All right.
Tune in next week.
Take us home. All right. Take care. Play it loud.